Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, Los Angeles! Welcome to Love It or Leave It. The Dodgers are facing the Yankees in the World Series, so whether your uncle is a sports fan or a politics fan, during the first week of November, he will have some reason to set a car on fire. Yes. Tonight on the show, Colorado Governor Jared Polis is here as we near the end of this schlong road to the election. SNL's Ego Wodum is here to call herself daddy. And director Barry Sonnenfeld saddles up for a ride to the Wild Wild West. Then we wrap it all up by staring into the bottomless black pit of the unknown, and in a fun way. But first, let's get into it. What a week. On Tuesday, Tim Walz took aim at the richest, cringiest man in the world during a rally in Wisconsin.
But look, I'm not going to waste all the time I'm in. I'm going to talk about his running mate. His running mate, Elon Musk. Elon's on that stage, jumping around, skipping like a dipshit on these things.
So satisfying. You know, like, when you hear a teacher curse, works every time. Apeve Musk said in response to Walz on Tuesday night, "You're gonna lose." We actually have a clip of it.
Yeah.
Elon is, first of all, it's funny. So, that movie, one of the heroes, hurts a child. That's okay then. It was a different time, both when it was and when it was about. Speaking of losing yourself, Eminem endorsed Kamala Harris at a rally in Detroit on Tuesday.
People shouldn't be afraid to express their opinions. And I don't think anyone wants an America where people are worried about retribution or what people will do if you make your opinion known. I think Vice President Harris supports a future for this country where these freedoms and many others will be protected and upheld.
These are the stakes. Eminem's words now versus Eminem's lyrics in the 2000s. Barack Obama then took the stage after Eminem's introduction, and the man was hyped.
My palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy, vomit on my sweater already, mom's spaghetti. I'm nervous, but on the surface I look calm and ready to drop bombs, but I keep on forgetting.
Dad, you're being crazy. He was into it too. He did a little humble kind of, I'm being silly, but he was into it. He's getting encouraged, getting cheered. Anyway, it was a better week for white rap, as Kamala also secured the endorsement of Insane Clown Posse, the Insane Clown Posse, and Insane Posse of Clowns. The endorsement came after Kamala proposed broadband access to the Dark Carnival. I don't know who that's for. Said Violent J in an interview to The Daily Show, "I want her to win because she's a Democrat and I love my mom." Later adding, "My mom said Democrats are saying less taxes on the poor, more taxes on the rich. As I'm often saying about the mother of Insane Clown Posse's Violent J, that woman raised her son right." Violent J also said he supports women's rights, explaining they have the right to be the fucking shit, and had this to say about environmental conservation.
We think we're the superior animal on this planet, right? Let me tell you what the superior animal is, a whale.
It's the biggest.
Take a good long look. That's what a man with perfect politics sounds like. If I hear one person making fun of him, I will lose it. People made fun of my posse when they asked, fucking magnets, how do they work? And you know what? It's a great question. Because you could take a whole course in electromagnetism in college, and at the end of it, you will still not know how magnets work. Not one person here knows how magnets work. And by the way, there is magic everywhere in this bitch. In less exciting and less important endorsement news, 23 Nobel Prize-winning economists, more than half of the living American recipients, signed on to a letter that called Harris's economic agenda vastly superior to Trump's. Or as MAGAworld reported it, the Jews are at it again. The letter is also signed by Eminem, who wasn't asked to participate but got a little excited. On Wednesday, Kamala sat down with Anderson Cooper for a CNN town hall, where she got right to the point.
You've quoted General Milley calling Donald Trump a fascist. You yourself have not used that word to describe him. Let me ask you tonight, do you think Donald Trump is a fascist?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And I also believe that the people who know him best on this subject should be trusted.
Yes, we just have to persuade people to listen to Trump's top military advisors, his White House staff, dozens of Republicans, women who have been assaulted by him, anyone who's ever had a casual exchange with him over the past two decades, your own eyes, his own words, every journalist who has interviewed him, every historian and expert on fascism, and the insane clown posse. Good company. In other news, Kamala will be reportedly delivering a closing argument next Tuesday from the Ellipse, the same place Donald Trump spoke on January 6, 2021, whipping his supporters into a frenzy that became the insurrection. And it says here that Harris's closing message is, I will protect abortion rights. Now let's go storm the Capitol. Kamala, no. 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 Maybe it's something about that space, like that town in New Hampshire from It. Speaking of election interference, on Wednesday, the Washington Post reported that RFK Jr.'s former running mate and current kook, Nicole Shanahan, attempted to pay a journalist $500,000 to whistleblow on her political opponents. On the bright side, someone tried to pay a journalist. The Justice Department warned Elon Musk's America PAC that its promise to pay out $1 million prizes to people who register to vote in swing states may violate federal election law, which is weird because all the cowed, exhausted lawyers on Musk's payroll thought it was an awesome idea. Anyway, please let him do this, DOJ. It's better for the nation if we let him spend every red cent. He's much less dangerous as a deadbeat dad of 11 than a guy who can pay to build a base on the moon. Speaking of the base, here's Tucker Carlson on Wednesday appealing to Trump's biggest fans in a way that feels honestly refreshing.
There has to be a point at which dad comes home. Dad comes home. And he's pissed. Dad is pissed.
Someone call Tim Walz, the weirdo meter could blow. We'll probably be okay, though, as long as this doesn't get 50 times weirder.
And when Dad gets home, you know what he says? You've been a bad girl. You've been a bad little girl, and you're getting a vigorous spanking right now.
Ugh. If everyone here at the theater looks under your chairs, you'll find your complimentary gift bag of a mini Dasani bottle and cyanide capsule. There's also a little card in there if you'd like to leave a note. And you don't even have to ask. He keeps going.
And no, it's not going to hurt me more than it hurts you. No, it's not. I'm not going to lie. This is going to hurt you a lot more than it hurts me. And you earned this. You're getting a vigorous spanking because you've been a bad girl.
We got to start kink shaming again. I'm sorry, but these people are getting horny for mass deportations before fucking each other's wives on cruise ships. And honestly, I think the Bible had some good points we ought to circle back to. Maybe if we win, we do Project 2025. I'm seeing that. I'm just spitballing. We've got to do something. What an absolute freak. Who is that for, by the way? It's a job about sending out Social Security checks and making sure the the roads are paved and so forth. Daddy's been a bad girl? What? That's not even how the saying would go. Well, it's not for me. I passed the fucking test. Tucker Carlson, he's been rich his whole life. He's been rich for as long as he's been a person. He has no idea what normal people go through. He didn't have a normal childhood of any kind, but he has a fantasy of some kind of 50s notion of what happens when dad comes home. And that, but like, think about what that represents, right? It represents an idea that first of all, mom is not a real authority figure and dad is a terrifying menace, right? Like that's like the good version of this fantasy, right? In his mind, it's like, wow, remember how great things used to be when people didn't have to listen to their mother because mom is just a kind of a servant of the father. But when dad got home, he was a gruff, violent menace. That's what their pitch is here. I'm at the end, people. I'm losing it. How many more of these are we going to do till we find out what happened?
Well, two.
Okay. Between 2 and 10. On Friday, Trump will travel to Austin, Texas for an interview with Joe Rogan in a bid to appeal to young male voters ahead of the election. No word on whether he will also attempt to gain support from young men who didn't like Todd Phillips' Joker. Reuters says Kamala could also sit down with Rogan, which the Harris campaign has yet to confirm or deny. Kamala, come on lowly. We can talk ancient aliens, creatine, whatever you want. Speaking of ancient aliens, a federal judge ruled that Rudy Giuliani must turn over all of his valuable possessions in addition to his Manhattan penthouse to the Georgia election workers he defamed during Stop the Steal. This is real. It was weird watching him cry as he handed Playboys from 1969 to the election workers one by one. I don't believe in saging a space to clear it of evil, but it would be hard to fall asleep in that apartment in the first night, mostly because a drunk Rudy Giuliani is scratching at the door like a feral cat, but also, it's creepy. After surrendering his apartment, Giuliani has temporarily moved into the Ritz-Carlton. I'm sorry, into Rick's carton. That's a refrigerator box in the garage of a man named Rick. The former mayor of New York and erstwhile Trump attorney owes vote counters Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss $150 million for smearing them during Trump's attempt to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Other luxury items Giuliani must fork over include a signed Joe DiMaggio jersey, several watches given to him by European presidents after September 11th, and a 1980 Mercedes once owned by actress Lauren Bacall. In good news, Lauren Bacall was released from the trunk unharmed. Nah. She died in 2014 of suffocation in the trunk of Rudy Giuliani's car. But the family was glad to finally get the bones back. A report in The Atlantic this week contained somehow new and shocking examples of Trump being awful and menacing. For example, Trump was reportedly enraged by the funeral bill for a 20-year-old Army private who was murdered by a fellow soldier after he invited her family to the White House and offered to cover the costs. Said Trump, "Sorry you don't want your daughter to be interred on a golf course, Your Majesty." That was a tough one. During a meeting in the Oval Office, Trump reportedly raged, "It doesn't cost $60,000 to bury a fucking Mexican." Trump then turned to his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, and said, "Don't pay it." And sure, the earth should have cracked open and swallowed him whole, should have just sucked him down like a pneumatic mail tube, but it didn't, and now we have to get Eminem involved. Trump also reportedly said in a private White House conversation, "I need the kind of generals that Hitler had, people who were totally loyal to him, that follow orders." Replied the DoorDash delivery driver, "Right, I still have to get a picture of the bag being delivered to you, though." Zone of interest, of course, an important text on the dangers of a hybrid work-from-home policy. Trump's former chief of staff, John Kelly, told The Atlantic that when Trump once asked him, "Why can't you be like the German generals?" he replied, "Do you mean Bismarck's generals?" Kelly continued, "I mean, I know he didn't know who Bismarck was or about the Franco-Prussian War. Do you mean the Kaiser's generals? Surely you can't mean Hitler's generals." And Trump responded, "Yeah, yeah, Hitler's generals." Hey, I have a question. What the fuck are we doing here? Hitler's generals. Over on Fox and Friends, Brian Kilmeade attempted to justify Trump's Hitler admiration.
"And I could absolutely see him going out, you know what? It would be great to have German generals that actually do what we asked them to do.
knowing that's a third, maybe not fully fully being cognizant of the third rail of German generals were Nazis and whatever.
That famously touchy subject. I'm sorry, your defense of Trump is he might not be familiar with the negative connotations associated with Hitler's generals. That's the defense. Also, not the most important point, but it is revealing, Hitler's generals famously tried to kill him several times before losing the war so badly that the French patrolled the streets until 2014. I do think the reason that matters is because what Trump is asking for here is in some ways even worse than reality, because he is asking for the fantasy of Hitler's Germany that exists only in his own mind. Here's Howie Kurtz weighing in.
Trump may have just been letting off steam about the loyalty he wanted from his generals compared to what he thought about Hitler's generals.
Who among us, after a stressful day, hasn't unwound by kicking off your shoes, sinking into a bubble bath, and wondering why the American military isn't more like the Wehrmacht? John Kelly also told the New York Times this week that Trump met the definition of a fascist, and Trump's former defense secretary, Mark Esper, agreed.
I'm not going to get into that type of labeling, if you will. But, you know, John Kelly did something, and he looked it up in a dictionary, and if you look it up, I think everybody should ask yourself, does he fall into those categories? And it's hard to say that he doesn't when you kind of look at those terms. But, you know, he certainly has those inclinations, and I think it's something we should be wary about.
Why do these people all suddenly sound like the Riddle of the Fucking Sphinx when talking about Donald Trump? Why are we doing reverse psychology? It's like a reverse psychology best man's wedding speech calling out fascism. Webster's dictionary defines love as an intense feeling of deep affection. I'm not going to say that that's what Josh and Christine have, but it's hard to deny that it meets the definition I just read. What are we doing here? New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu was asked on CNN whether the explosive new revelations changed how he felt about Trump and his plans to vote for him, and he offered this.
Look, we've heard a lot of extreme things about Donald Trump from Donald Trump. It's kind of par for the course. It's really, unfortunately, with a guy like that, it's kind of baked into the vote.
The question was, do you support this? And your answer is, you know, I think a lot of people dismiss what Trump says. But the reason people dismiss what Trump says is because people like you go on television and justify supporting him anyway. This shit is baked into the vote because depraved people like you put on a chef's hat and an apron and bake it in. It's your recipe in your restaurant, and I will not kiss the chef. LeBron James and his son Bronny made history during Tuesday's Lakers versus Timberwolves game, becoming the first father and son duo to play together in NBA history. Their next challenge, becoming the first father and son to talk on the phone for more than 2 minutes before handing the phone to mom. The U.S. Department of Transportation fined American Airlines $50 million for numerous serious violations against disabled passengers, including damage to wheelchairs and even physical injuries due to unsafe physical assistance by staff. Never surrender, you fags, said Spirit Airlines CEO, as he sprayed down a group of hog-tied senior citizens who tried to board before their zone was called. If you don't want to be hog-tied, you have to sign up for their credit card. Never surrender, you fags. This week, former Abercrombie & Fitch CEO Mike Jeffries was charged with sex trafficking, with authorities alleging Jeffries used a casting couch to coerce and sexually assault male models. But does this look like the face of a man who would do that? Speaking of sickening, at least 49 people across 10 states have fallen ill in an E. coli outbreak linked to McDonald's Quarter Pounders. McDonald's, I defended you. I trusted you. And look what they did to my boy. Look at how they massacred my boy. Anyway, when Chipotle had their E. coli moment, there were no lines. And they sometimes just gave you your burrito for free to say thank you for showing up. It was a glorious time. Drive-through lines are about to be a breeze, baby. And I'm here for a good time, not a long time. It really was true. I'd be like, oh my God, you just walk right into Chipotle and you would just get together and they just hand you the burrito and they say, that one's on us. Thank you for your bravery. While promoting her new erotic drama, Baby Girl, Nicole Kidman told The Sun she experienced burnout from too many fictional orgasms. And weirdly, all of them were on the set of Paddington. Los Angeles County prosecutor requested a resentencing for the Menendez brothers, which could lead to immediate parole after they're serving more than 3 decades in prison for the murder of their parents. So my sympathies to single straight women in Los Angeles, already hanging on to sanity by the thinnest of gossamer strands, coming across Lyle Menendez's Hinge profile.
Yeah. If you're convicted of killing your parents, do you get the money anyway? I don't know. I don't think so. Where's that money go then? Interesting to think about. Speaking of women going through it, Kotex is giving away free stigma-fighting jeans with a clear pocket to show off your maxi pad. Not to be outdone, Trojan will be releasing a pair of jeans that loudly make this noise whenever they detect an erection.
Yahoo!
Put a binder in front of it. Doesn't matter. Everybody heard the noise. And finally, bear enthusiasts are grieving. After the death of grizzly number 399, one of the more beloved grizzlies in Grand Teton National Park, the killer, RFK Jr., remains at large. Up next, it's Governor Jared Polis.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
And we're back. It's time to say Rocky Mountain hi. Okay. To my next guest. He puts the cool in Colorado. All right, we just got it. Governor Jared Polis. Good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Let's start. I want to start, all right, with I think a sensitive subject for both of us. I was in Boulder.
My hometown. Welcome.
Yeah, and yes. You were not able to make Love It or Leave It. You couldn't do it.
Good excuse, by the way. Can I tell you?
Your excuse was that you had to be a part of the parade that circled Boulder and the theater.
No. My uncle's 90th birthday, Holocaust survivor, was in New York City. So, yes. I mean, John Lovett, Holocaust survivor, 90-year-old
uncle.
Was
it on the actual day?
That was the day of his party. Yeah, we had it.
Day of his party.
Yeah. We all came in. He has some thoughts about Hitler, by the way.
Yeah, I bet. Against. Hated it.
Hated it. He was on one of the Kinder transports and was 12 years old and was in Switzerland basically during the war without his parents. He lost his dad. His mom somehow made it through. But one of those great stories. Married my dad's sister and have great kids and grandkids and everybody else.
Yeah. So he does probably.
Thank goodness Hitler's generals didn't win.
Yes. Well, they were not very particularly good, and they did try to kill him. One of the interviews by one of these guys said that they had mentioned Rommel to Trump, and Trump was not familiar with Rommel. And, like, I don't understand how a straight American man can get from 40 to 70 without having gone through
the
Desert Fox phase. It really speaks to a real kind of emptiness and depravity, Donald Trump, that he didn't go through that phase where he would say, like, well, you know, they called him the Desert Fox. All right, we should move on.
And tried to take down Hitler, of course.
One of the many generals who tried to take out Hitler. Did you have any questions about Arnold Palmer's schlong before Trump brought it up last week?
As a topic that I never have thought about or want to think about.
Yeah.
I think that's like isn't that the drink our kids have at restaurants, like lemonade and iced tea or
something? Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But I do think there's...
By the way, that's what my kids know it as, because they're post Arnold Palmer. I mean, it's a drink, not a person.
Right.
So it's really confusing to kids who think it's a drink.
Right. I mean, I think, like, you know, Shirley Temple, Arnold Palmer, the drink...
Shirley Temple's a drink too.
Yeah, yeah. That's right, of course. Of course it is.
Not a lollipop.
No. My feeling about Arnold Palmer is you really want 60 to 80% iced tea. You really don't want 50-50. But that's not important.
It's actually foreign for me. I just go for unsweetened iced tea myself. So
wow. I mean,
I'm hardcore.
What a austere existence. That must be awful. How do you move through life like that?
With the caffeine.
Oh, right. All right. So I do want to ask you something serious, which is, you have been one of the local leaders who has been dealing with what happens when Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and the MAGA media propaganda network sets its sights on an area to try to turn it into a kind of horror story about immigration. And Donald Trump has started talking about Aurora as this terrible example of what's gone wrong in immigration, that the town is overrun and been taken over by gangs. And I just want you to talk about, obviously that's false, but what happens in a place like Aurora when a presidential candidate, a former president, makes that kind of accusation?
So Aurora is an awesome town. It's Colorado's third largest city, over 400,000 people. Now, we have it's also an amazing city. We have like little Vietnam, Koreatown. Now, I have to say, though, I drove through your L.A. Koreatown on the way here. It kind of makes ours look a little wimpy, but I'm proud of it for Colorado.
Okay, thank you for saying that. I mean, was like a little nervous for a second that I was going to have to have a fight.
We have four blocks.
We were driving
for like 20 minutes, but actually that was only four blocks in L.A., 20 minutes, so...
He came around. He got us. So hey, seriously, you know what? He got us.
Yeah. So, look, seriously, though, he talked about a Colorado that none of us who live in Aurora or anywhere in Colorado recognize. I mean, the facts matter. People who live in Aurora love it. Great place to raise kids, raise a family, retire. Crime is down 2 years in a row in Aurora. It's down actually more than it's down in the state. It's down 25% in Aurora. And it's a great town. So, like, when he comes and talks about it, first of all, he gets in the airport, by the way, all the land around it, Aurora. If you've ever been to Denver International Airport, right around it, Aurora. That's Aurora.
Yeah, there's that there's that evil horse.
I'm surprised that hasn't made it onto the right wing circuit, that demon horse.
I mean, evil horse that killed the artist.
It did, actually. That's actually true, as John knows. So the artist who made it died. It collapsed on him while he was making his sunset to finish it. Tragic story. It is beautiful art. I like it. Some people hate it. Some people like it.
It's hideous.
And it's art. It's art. Hey, what airport art do you like? I mean, this is airport art.
I don't know. I just think it would. I mean, just a field there would have been nice.
So anyway, when Donald Trump came to Aurora, he just went to the airport, went over to a hotel, fancy hotel, of course. Said, you know, Aurora, take it over, gangs, blah blah blah, and that actually hurts him in Colorado because Coloradans know that, like, who is this guy coming to our town and attacking it, describing a town we don't even recognize? He wasn't there to win Colorado. He was there to talk to other people about this vision in his head of this dark, scary, sinister America. And, you know, it's a shame that he picked on us, frankly. And you know, we're going to pick on him back.
Donald Trump flying in to Colorado to persuade people who don't live in Colorado of something false about Colorado is a pretty good, small example of the larger kind of fraud that Donald Trump is perpetuating right now in his campaign. He is trying to rile up a bunch of people into believing that the cities are unlivable, that the country's being overrun. How do you, as somebody who is a governor, which is a job that requires just delivering and actually kind of meeting people and being on the ground, how do you strike the balance between addressing people's genuine concerns around the border, around immigration, while also not giving in and not being afraid to say, hey, actually, you know what? Crime is going down. Actually, you know what? We don't need to be, we can address this issue without this kind of apocalyptic language.
So look, there's the facts, and yes, crime is down, but that doesn't diminish the experience of victims of any crime. It's a terrible thing. If crime is down 90%, that 10% that experiences a burglary or an assault, that's a horrible thing, and we need to hold those perpetrators accountable and lock them away for a long time. When it comes to the border, I believe, and I was served in Congress for 10 years, I believe and I know the Democrats want to solve it rather than talk about it. We want to secure the border. We don't want to complain about a broken border. We actually want to fix it. That's what Kamala Harris will do, and that's what Democrats in Congress will do.
Hey, so... Does your baseball team have an advantage because you're so high up and the balls go further and their lungs are used to it?
Over the White Sox, maybe.
I don't understand the reference. I thought we're both gay. Now, that's stolen valor, sort of a sports reference I'm meant to get.
If there's a Venn diagram as John Lovett fans and baseball fans, they will get that reference I made. I don't know how big that group is, but they will get it.
Hi, Jeff.
Jeff in Toledo.
Wait, there's somebody. You get it. Front row. We got a front row person. But seriously, do the balls go further up there?
They do. Yeah. So, because of both, there was even a mini scandal about balls kept in a humidor a few years ago. If anybody remembers, so
humid balls.
Yeah. Well, and then there's this saying in baseball: it always depends what mood they're in Haiti, whether they wind them tight or not, and. But yeah, we had a humidor scandal in Colorado, 5-6 years ago. But yes, balls go further. It's a hitter's ballpark. Pitchers that do well elsewhere in the league fall apart when they come to Colorado. We've learned to live with this.
That seems like a cool problem
you
for you guys.
Do you understand any of that, John?
Yes, I would say, because you guys, your lungs are used to it. You guys have gotten the extra hemoglobin.
There you go. You got the biological part down. Are you like a mathematician or something? Are you?
I did study math. I'm smarter than I seem. Sometimes. Sometimes I'm dumber than I. I lost my train of thought. Do you care who wins between the Yankees and the Dodgers?
You know, so Rockies are NL West. So
National League West.
National. Yes. I am. That is awesome. So yes, I'm going to go with the Dodgers. And Ohtani is just incredible. And yeah. I'm in Los Angeles, and politicians like to pander.
Yeah, that's good.
I've heard.
His translator was stealing millions of dollars in betting.
That happens.
That's crazy. Really well beyond the purview of a translator. He's supposed to just sort of communicate on your behalf. There's a lot of banking involved.
And gambling.
Gambling. Terrible.
But the guy can play. I mean,
he's very good. Oh, he's apparently very good.
Oh my God.
Yes, he's very good. I've heard of him. If I've heard of him, that's how good. You have to be really good. Let's see. Oh, back to Colorado. Colorado endorsed year-round daylight savings time, okay, in 2022. How do we get? We got to get Congress to do something. Here's my view on this. I think some states should keep switching. If they like switching, they should keep switching. Some states want to be on standard time, they should be on standard time. Some states want to be on daylight saving time, they should be on daylight saving time. But nobody's passed a bill like that. The only two bills, there's the current standard, but there's no bill that just says everybody can do whatever they want.
I would absolutely support that. So, you know, some states like Arizona, they don't shift time because they predated this law that preempts them. But none of us got in time. I think it was before I was born, probably before you were born. And I absolutely agree that Congress should leave the important matter of time up to the states. We're perfectly capable of handling it.
They're perfect. I got dragged. So you are gay after all.
You're in drag?
No, you dragged me. All right.
You want me to read you?
You're a
The library is open.
Oh my God. No. All right. No. If you want to, you can. Just throw it in. I'm going to make a whole show of it. All right. As a Swiftie, what is your favorite Taylor Swift song?
Oh, God. So this is true. I was actually just in the Eras Tour in Miami. Had an amazing time. I campaigned for Kamala while I was down there, too. I was there for Kamala. Do you believe that?
No, I don't. Okay. I simply don't.
I'm going to go Shake It Off.
Shake It Off? Interesting. I like Exile. I was in a moody phase when I heard it. You know? It's about breakup. It was helpful during a breakup. Let's see. What else do I got for you? Hey, as the first out gayvener, this race has been mostly focused on abortion, on the border, on inflation. Do you think people really understand the stakes around LGBT issues?
I hope it gets talked about more. I mean, first of all, Kamala Harris, completely supportive of LGBT community. I mean, zero question. Donald Trump appointed Supreme Court justices who, of course, removed right to choose for women. And obviously what we're scared about, and it's not just a potential, it's a real threat, depending on the future direction of the Supreme Court, is we could lose the ability to marry who we love, because that's only protected by Supreme Court precedent. It's a law in some states. It's on the ballot in Colorado this year. I think it'll pass. But obviously people should be able to marry who they love as Americans, wherever they are. And that's, yes, very much in jeopardy.
Colorado also has a Dolly Parton Imagination Library. What do you do in there?
Oh, this is awesome. So Dolly Parton has an incredible philanthropic effort where they send every month families who sign up a book, an age-appropriate book for a year-old, two-year-old, all the way up through 4 years old. So we implemented this in Colorado. I think we're now in every county in our state, and we partner with Dolly Parton to do that.
That's cool. Dolly Parton's cool.
Dolly Parton is very cool.
And you're a gamer. You're a gamer.
I am.
And you're playing League of Legends?
Yes.
Do you play? Yes. Interesting.
Do you play?
I don't play the online big fighting games. I like to face off against a game.
So
I don't like to play other people.
This
was
not a single person shooter. It's it's five versus five on a field. So it's fun. And me and my husband do that many nights, most nights a week.
Can you both play on the same screen?
Yeah, we'd be on the same team. Exactly.
That's cool.
Well, we're on different computers.
You're on different computers.
Yeah, we can't play on the same computer.
Well, I'm saying you know that's what it used to be.
That's like a console system. This is a PC game.
Okay, sorry. Do you have a controller or are you using ASD and how are we moving around?
It's a mouse. mouse and a keyboard. It's
God
a PC game.
God damn it.
Yeah.
That is dorky. No controller? I don't want to play a video game without a controller. I like a controller.
It's a free country, man. Play whatever game you want.
No, I'm just not for me. I wasn't trying to insult you. I'm sorry. Did you see that Taylor wore a new outfit during the Eras tour?
Well, I mean, she had multiple outfit changes. Yeah.
There's a new era, but there's something new as it cycled in, apparently, for Reputation.
Is that right? Yeah. I mean, what was amazing is just, I mean, first of all, the stamina of this woman. I mean, we're talking a 4-hour concert. We're talking 8-10 costume changes. I mean, this is absolutely incredible in addition to the talent. So just an amazing lady.
It is pretty good. It's a pretty wild show.
Where did you see it?
Los Angeles. Okay, talk about that. Talk about traffic. Final pitch for people to make sure that they do what they can here in the last 10 days.
Yeah, look, if you're listening to this, vote. Start by voting, right? Wherever you are, vote. Vote. Election day, early, whatever it is. And then your family, your friends, take personal responsibility to get them out. It's the most meaningful contact that somebody get. We have volunteers going door to door, and that helps. But if your friend or family member takes ownership and reminds you and helps you do it, that's more important than anything. So if you care about this election, care about electing Kamala Harris, make sure your personal network, friends, family, they all vote.
Yeah. And I just also want to say, like, Colorado is a state that was a swing state. And over time, through a lot of organizing, a lot of work, it is now a blue state. And because it's a blue state, you're able to do incredible things on renewable energy, incredible things on healthcare, incredible things on education. Donald Trump can go there to try to foment whatever he wants to try to foment, but Colorado is in Democratic hands.
We are ready. We're saving people money. We're cutting costs. We've cut income tax 3 times. We've cut property tax. We're building more housing. We're protecting our environment. It's a great place to live.
Colorado. Governor Jared Polis, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back. Thank you. When we come back, Ego Odom is here. And we're back. Please welcome Ego Odom. Hi, good to see you. Thanks
Great
for being
to see
here.
You. Thank you for having me.
First of all, how are you here? You must be exhausted.
I am always exhausted. My friend told me before you make any tough decisions, you should halt. That is, discern whether you are hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I'm all of those things all the time.
Yeah, I guess I'll never make another fucking
decision. I'll never make a hard decision again in my life.
Yeah, but it's SNL in an election year.
Yeah, but we're off this week. We happen to be on hiatus this week.
And you're just going to work through it.
Does this work? This is fun.
It is fun, but I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
But also I like working. Blessed to be able to work. So, yeah. Aw. She's grateful.
Nice. Now, you have a new podcast.
Yes.
And it's called, and tell people what it's about. It's called Thanks Dad.
It's called Thanks Dad. Today, my friend called it Thank You Dad. And I go, it doesn't quite have the same ring to it, but it's called Thanks Dad. I was raised by a single mom. Don't have a relationship with my dad. I'm never going to have a relationship with him because turns out he died last year. It's okay. No, it's not sad. I want you to laugh. I'm a comedian. Thank you. That's the response. I like this audience.
Yeah,
they listen.
You gotta bully them sometimes.
Oh no!
but their hearts are in the right place.
They're easy. That's what was so
good,
easy.
They're good people.
Yeah, they're
most of them
sweet people. They mean well.
One of them's gonna write postcards. Some of them aren't doing shit.
Oh no!
A couple of them.
So a couple who? Point them out.
I protected their anonymity.
Lights on in the house and point them out.
I don't like that.
I'm feeling violent.
Row.
Okay, no, third row. Okay, but so, I can see the third row.
So you started this podcast. Your dad's dead. It's funny.
It's funny. Not sad.
Not sad. Funny. Yeah. Dead dad. That's a funny one.
It's fun.
It's a funny thing.
It's silly.
It's silly.
Okay.
It's goofy.
So I have father figures come on the podcast to be my dad for the day, and I get to talk to them about what their dad was like and then what they are like as dads. And then they end each episode, or I end each episode, asking them for a piece of dad advice. I coined that recently.
Oh, yeah,
dad
advice.
I don't know if I like it. It might be too corny, but
I do get
a piece of advice from them. What do we think?
It should be corny.
Okay, thank you. I like this audience.
Yeah. I saw someone on Twitter talking about a dad joke their dad told them about. What happened when water from the morning had caused a fence to open and let some pigs loose? And he sang.
I don't follow, but keep going.
Well, he sang, "Do let the hogs out."
Aw. Sad. Dude, see, I said sad to a funny thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, now sometimes
we're on the same.
Know.
They don't know.
Now it's even playing field.
Do let the hogs out.
I got it. I did get
I thought that was a good dad joke.
I got it.
It was in a very moving poem, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, fascinating.
Do you find having a podcast dad for a few minutes helpful?
I find it, yes, sure. It seems a lot of these dads, I've had wonderful guests on the podcast, not to disparage my guests, but it seems a lot of them aren't equipped to advise me. And that makes me feel like I didn't miss out on having a dad. It's rather healing. I go, nobody knows what they're doing.
Nobody knows what they're doing.
It's all a ruse.
Now, I don't have any kids, but I guess my Google searches for...
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I got an envelope in my... Well, I hate to tell you.
What a twist that would be. But my Google searches for more fiber, please help, toilet shattered, did tip the algorithm.
Okay.
Because half the videos I get are about parenting. And boy, I've noticed a trend. And here's the trend.
Okay.
How people treat fathers online versus mothers. Mm. And so we're going to explore it in a game we're calling Double Standards. Double stand dads.
Dads, stand dads.
Double stand dads.
And some dads are named Stan. And so this is really just a double entendre dad.
Right. Stan double standards dads.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read you something a parent did, and you have to tell us who did this, a fun dad or a bad mom.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
Okay.
Number one, is gluing bows to your baby's bald ass head... Is that something an overenthusiastic dad sharing his infant daughter with affection, or is it a mother who should be scrutinized by all of America for her commitment to femininity?
Ooh, I think that was... Ooh. A dad had to do that.
I know.
Oh, my God.
If a dad did it, it'd be fun, but when a mom does it, this is what happens.
Okay. Actual glue?
Well, I'm sure it's biodegradable or whatever. Amy Davis Clark received backlash online for posting a video praising Girly Glue, a baby-safe hair glue she used to decorate her daughter's hair with bows.
Amy, don't do that.
You
next
think no?
Time. Amy.
I don't know. I think it's cute.
Amy, you can't do that. It doesn't even look like a bow. It looks like a bandage.
Yeah.
It looks like baby hit her head.
Is the baby eating the glue?
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Now,
looks like tomato paste also. So this whole photo is confusing to me, but yes. I'm like, that looks like the tomato paste I buy at the grocery store. And that looks like a bandage on the baby's head. But okay. We love you, Amy.
You know what?
Yeah.
I have a question about tomato paste.
Sure.
How long do you think, do you have to cook it? Or can it just kind of go in right at the end?
I think you got to cook it. It's so rich and such a strange flavor. I feel like it needs to be cooked.
You got to cook it for a while?
I think it's got to be cooked.
Yes?
Yeah.
All
I don't
right,
think
well,
it's enjoyable. Have okay. you been just at the end, right off the tube, slurping, derping tomato paste?
I was wondering why it was weird.
Oh, no.
Not a good cook. Next up, not being enraged at having four daughters.
Oh my gosh, that's gonna be dad.
Yeah, four girls in one house, more like four Satans in four hells. Or is it? Is this? Yep, this is a fun dad embracing his crowing, squabbling brood.
Oh, girl, dad.
Father Austin von Lettkemann. I don't like that. Went viral on Instagram in April for a video telling people to, for the love of God, stop coming up to him in public and saying, I'm sorry, when they find out he has four daughters.
Is that real?
They come up to him and say, sorry, you have four daughters.
That's cuckoo bananas. That's truly crazy. Then on one hand, I'm thinking, are the people doing that because they're like, oh, you're going to have to protect your girls? Or is it because girls are hard? What do we think the sorry is about? It's
know.
Not okay, regardless.
Right.
But
I think it's like, bitches be crazy. That's how I.
Calling
that's how
his
I was.
Poor children, bitches.
They look very sweet.
They look so sweet. The one on the end, she.
It's just funny that it's like this gets you on four girls television.
Yeah, well, girl dad. He's like a this quintessential girl dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is couldn't that just be a dad?
That's just a
Can't
dad.
A girl dad just be a dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like when you know I'm a I you know as a. as a father of daughters, I care about equality. It's like, okay.
Yeah, all right.
Well, did you not get it before?
Right. I know. It's like, you don't need to have daughters or even a female cousin or like, you could just go, equality is correct.
Right. Like, use your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you're related to anyone.
Right. In life, frankly.
Right. Just sort of think of the world. They're all related to someone. Who cares about them?
Correct.
And that could have been you.
Right.
You could care about them as if.
Facts.
It's interesting that people don't think that. Like, whenever a Republican politician who is anti-gay becomes pro-gay because their kid is gay,
mm-hmm.
it's like, you're so close to getting it.
Mm-hmm.
You're so close.
Yeah.
Now imagine everyone that has everything is your son.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. Love it.
You know what that sound means?
No, I don't. I actively do not.
It's time for the celebrity parent lightning round. I will read you something a parent did. I need you to say mom or dad as your answer. And if you want a bonus point, you will tell us who that celebrity is.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Declared themselves co-parent of the child after initially trying to hide the existence of the child.
I'm hearing people say Arnold, so I'm going to go dad. Tom Brady.
It's
also
actually so many people. Texting with their 16-month-old child.
Texting with their 16-month-old child. Mom.
It was actually dad, because in a baffling BBC interview, 83-year-old actor Al Pacino said of his 16-month-old son, Roman, he does text me from time to time.
Al also, like, saw death, right? Or something, he says. Okay.
He's been through it. Those big eyes.
Those big, beautiful eyes. Expressive eyes.
They're really expressive.
That's what casting directors say they're looking for in talent. Big, expressive eyes.
Has Al Pacino ever hosted while you were there?
Unfortunately not. No. Yeah.
I bet that'd be funny.
I bet it would be fun.
Hmm.
I'm trying not to cheat. I'm not looking.
Hmm. Wearing a diamond-encrusted necklace that says Skibbity Toilet.
It's giving dad.
It was mom. Kim Kardashian.
I don't know anything about parents. Okay. Yeah.
Well, this is why you need the podcast.
Yeah.
Whose daughter, Northwest, got her a Skibbity Toilet necklace for her 44th birthday.
Oh, fun.
Skibbity Toilet.
I don't understand what Skibbity Toilet is.
It's important that we never know.
Okay.
It's important that we never know. It's apparently a web series. Oh, I have a card telling us what it is.
What is Skibbity? Maybe today I can learn something. What is Skibbity
Toilet? Is a web series from Alexei Gerasimov on his channel Defuck Boom about a war between human-headed toilets and human-like characters with TVs for heads that has become wildly viral.
Didn't understand any of those words. And that's, my friend, is a Skibbity Toilet. I'm confused as well. Whoever said that in the audience is my kin. I'm also, that was a lot of words that they all individually make sense, but then thrown together.
Culture's leaving us behind.
It is. I feel like the rapture has happened.
Yeah, that's what getting older is about,
yeah,
I think.
I think so.
How is it working on SNL during an election year?
You know, it feels like I think I've done it before. It feels the same, honestly, every year that way.
It's incredibly intense no matter what's going on.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Do you feel like there's a pressure to be part of this debate about in a way that's funny, even though the stakes feel so high?
Well, I think that, I mean, given it's a comedy show, the writers are always thinking funny first. And so I don't know that it feels more, they feel more pressure. I can't speak to it because that cold open that is usually political, I don't write and I'm rarely a part of. And so, I don't know what they're thinking, but it's funny. And I think they're always aiming to make it funny and sort of draw from whatever is happening and has happened in the landscape that week.
Yeah. Do you ever hear from Jasmine Crockett?
I had lunch with Jasmine Crockett like last week.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I had lunch with Jasmine Crockett last week. We talked about everything.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.
What did you talk about?
Let me be mindful and demure. We talked about her. She's on the campaign trail for Kamala, so she's tired and she's bouncing all around. She's everywhere. We talked about dating. We talked about, I feel like there was something else really juicy in there. I can't remember. But it was like a little, we had a good kiki, me and Congresswoman Crockett.
She's cool.
Yeah, she's really cool. I like her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
what's a piece of advice you got from a podcast dad that you actually found really helpful?
Recently, Langston Kerman was one of my dads, and I was asking him about ghosting, and he said that, I found this fascinating. He was like, ghosting is not the violence we've made it out to be. He's like, I don't believe it is. He says, I actually think engaging with people when you're not interested is more violent than ghosting. And he was like, and if you've never made a promise to someone and it's very early on and you haven't made plans and it was one date, you can ghost rather than engage with them knowing you're not interested.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I have some ghosting regrets. And I think part of what makes a ghosting, I think sometimes what leads to ghosting is what makes it so bad to do, is because in a date, sometimes you will have this kind of like brief and false intimacy, mm-hmm. which you'll kind of lean into. Mm-hmm. And then the date is over and you don't want that intimacy again.
Really?
That's how, well, I'm saying you, but.
And that's happened to me, you said? I'm yet to experience.
But you know what I mean? And so like, I sometimes feel like when I have felt the worst is because like I had led someone on,
You weren't like, tangible. Well, was there any talk of like, we should go to that museum? I'd love to go to that with you.
Yes.
There was that. Oh,
there's
see.
That level. But, okay. But I think it's less about a specific plan for the future. There's no contract. There's nothing objective that you can point to. But there is a kind of, I think there's like an emotional line where you cross it and then you really owe somebody a text. And then I panicked. I would ghost.
You would just short answers.
Rare. And also, like, I'll come back to this. And then I never came back to it. And I feel guilty about it.
And when you say, I'll come back to this, do you mean the text or this person?
Like, I need to send this person a text.
So ultimately you did ghost.
Yes.
Okay. And that is rough. But you have regrets about it. So yes. I don't need to shame you further.
No, but I do have regrets about it. Have you ever ghosted anybody?
Sure. Lots of people.
Do you have regrets about it?
No. Typically, no. Because I don't make... I'm stunned. I have been on dates where I'm not having a good time. I'm like very aware of the time and just shy of, I don't wear a wristwatch, but I should start so that I can get a sense of how long we've been here. Because I've sat on dates and thought about the other person and I would not want them to feel rejected. So I've like let the date be a date. And in my mind, 2 hours, we did it, Joe. But I'm not interested and I'm not trying to sell you that narrative either. And then that person maybe after is like, let's do it again. And I'm like, unfortunately, I was not with you. I mean, I was physically with you, but I was in no way having a time and I was actively trying not to mislead you during that time.
But I bet. Can I ask you a question?
Sure, you can. What I answer is TBD. But yes,
that's the beauty of questions.
Of questions and answers. But if I answer, I should say.
Yeah, you don't have to answer. Okay, and that goes for anything.
You can ask me.
You can get up and walk out anytime you want.
That's
and then
a fact.
And ghost.
That's
you can just disappear.
What if I ghosted this episode of
just gone.
That wouldn't be a ghosting because I'd be kind of sort of announcing my departure.
But I would have I wonder, there are dates where another person would be like, this is the best date of my life. Hmm. And for you, it's a B- at best, mm-hmm. but you're very funny and charming.
Thank you.
It's like, was it a good date or did you just carry a great time?
I find myself asking this. I talk about it in therapy.
Really?
I do talk about it in therapy. I'll go on dates and genuinely not be trying to be charming. And in fact, go, I'd like to see what you bring to the table. Like, almost like an interviewer.
Right.
And so I think maybe that is what's happening. Maybe the other party is finding me fun and charming. But I'm actively, I feel like toning it all like down and just being sort of drywall.
Yeah, but... How do we cover this light, you know? Need a pretty thick blanket. Cover this
That's
light.
That's very sweet. You know, there may be something to that. And you might, but I talk about it in therapy because I'm like, it's interesting. They think that we had a great time. And I'm curious to know on what basis. This sounds so bitchy.
No,
but
it's
I'm
not.
Like,
it's interesting.
I'm like, I know when I've had a really good time and me and another person are hitting it off and it's like, oh my gosh, the energy, the vibes, we're both right here. What a time we're having. And then there's these other dates. There are these other dates that I'm like, that's not really happening. Did you really have a great time, or was I just not so bad, and thus that's a great time to you? Does that make sense?
No, it does make. Yeah, it's interesting. Do you ever have the opposite where you've put on quite a show and you realize after that that was fun because I was on and I didn't really get much from the other person?
Yes, I have. I've gone on dates being like, I refuse to have a bad time tonight, so I'm going to have a good time, and then it will be a good time. And then, but if we were to, you know, post game inventory, if you will, I go, oh, they weren't really doing much of anything, but I wanted to have a good time that night, and I did. And whether you're sitting there or not, I was.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Sometimes you want to go on a date and you're like, I don't want to have a bad time. And so I'm not going to have a bad time. Yeah. But dating's weird.
It's hard.
Yeah. I don't even know if I think it's hard.
I'm sorry I said that.
No, no, you can. No. You said it's hard. I said it's weird. You have your opinion. I think it's strange. I think it's a strange.
Is there anyone here on a date? Wow.
Anytime that happens, is everyone coupled? Is that
is
why?
Everyone here? No one here is on a date.
Is everyone here single? That was like a big woo.
How many people here are coupled up? How many people are here in polyamorous arrangements? Hasn't really caught. It's very
it
online.
Hasn't, yeah.
Hasn't caught.
But I bet there are people here in polyamorous arrangements.
Is anyone here pretending to not be in a polyamorous relationship, but having a secret emotion?
I heard a little woo. I'm seeing a friend point to a friend in the first row.
Ooh.
And he's shaking his head.
Wow.
And then we're getting accurate.
That's cool.
Why are you afraid of this? Why is that shameful?
Is it still a weird thing?
We found one.
Wow. Get him.
I knew it.
Bring in the police.
Wait, why is...
are you happy? Wow, that's nice. I think it's an abomination.
Are you happy? I think it's an abomination.
Ego Bodum, thank you so much
thank
for being
you
here. This is fun. Everybody,
me.
Check out the podcast. Thanks, Dad.
Thank you.
Ego, we'll be back at the end of the show. We are back.
Yeah.
Thank you. When we come back, Barry Sonnenfeld is here.
Don't go anywhere. This is Love It or Leave It, and there's more on the way.
And we're back! My next guest loves making movies and hating Donald Trump. Please welcome to the stage a Hollywood icon and legend, Barry Sonnenfeld. Thank you for being here. Here, come around.
Hi, John.
Hi. Barry, may I call you Barry?
Unfortunately, yes.
Do you not like your name, Barry?
Hate it.
Really?
I ran into Bill Hader once, and I said, did you call your main character Barry because, like, it's the ultimate loser name? And he went, yeah.
Why? Why is it such a loser name?
It's just a loser name. I hate it. Although, if I was a woman, I would have been Bertha. So I'm kind of okay.
My grandmother's name was Bessie.
Bessie. Well, yeah. That's an old-fashioned name, ain't it?
Yeah. And my grandfather was Bernie, so it was Bernie and Bessie. And she was a very big person. She was a very she was a big Bessie, and it went with the name. She fit her.
Can you imagine what I'd look like if I was Bertha? Yeah,
be beautiful.
Yeah, thank you, John.
Well, recently a guest on Kelly Ripa's podcast, you revealed that Will Smith farted so badly on the set of 1997 smash hit Men in Black, you had to evacuate the set for 3 hours. My question is what?
Okay. Guess what? That's
what?
Not true. That's not true. Here's what happened.
What happened?
Okay. So Will and Tommy in Men in Black 1, Tommy Lee Jones,
famously,
are inside the hypercar, and they're upside down going through the Midtown Tunnel, and they're locked in to this hermetically sealed space, and they're up 15 feet, and they're upside down, and I say, roll camera, and I hear Will says, geez, oh, sorry, Tommy. Oh, my God, Baz, get us down. Get us down right away. Get us down. Tommy, I'm so sorry. And you hear Tommy go, that's okay, Will. And we get the ladder. We open up the thing. Tommy is like reaching out to the ladder before it's even close to him. And Will had farted. Will is a known farter. He does a lot of farting. But here's what happened. He farted. Well, everyone knows
everyone's
that.
Everyone's a known farter. Everyone farts.
No, but Will is sort of a little more proud of his farting than most. So, but here's the thing. Kelly then said, and did you have to evacuate the stage? Well, obviously we didn't have to. No one's fart has you having to evacuate a stage. So I said, yeah, for like 3 hours as a joke. But Variety has it like on the front page that I had to evacuate the stage for 3 hours. So I apologize, Will, wherever you are.
Having a...
a fart somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody farts. Isn't it weird that it's something we all do, but it's embarrassing?
No.
Good answer. Can you please give our podcast an anecdote equal to or more disgusting than that one? For example, did John Travolta have explosive diarrhea on the set of Get Shorty? Perhaps Tim Allen had a terrible boil while making Big Trouble.
Okay, none of those happened, but I will tell you that I was on Johnny Knoxville's show, Squeezing a Blackhead, that I save up for 8 or 10 years.
It's more disgusting. I asked for this, and I'm getting what I'm asked for.
But anyway, Knoxville brought out a crew, and I squeezed my blackhead, and he said it's the most disgusting thing he's ever had on his show.
Wow, what an achievement.
I'm very proud of that.
Do you think Big Trouble was undermined by 9/11 or Tim Allen or both?
Mainly, in all honesty, Tim Allen was no fun to work with at all, but mainly 9/11. I mean, we were supposed to come out... we were supposed to come out 11 days after 9/11, and a plot involved Tom Sizemore and Johnny Knoxville stealing a suitcase nuclear bomb. Oh, look, there's Warburton, one of my all-time favorite people ever. Stealing a nuclear bomb, which wouldn't work 9 days after 9/11. 11 days after 9/11,
right.
So, yeah.
Tim Allen a prick?
Yeah. No. He's just one of those comedians that's always on.
Oh, I hate those people. So I want to ask you about this.
Yes, John?
David Schwimmer talked about turning down the Men in Black role that would eventually go to Will Smith. Schwimmer said, I don't know if I made the right choice. My question is, what?
Well, Schwimmer says he was up for that role, so he probably was. The one that I remember was, sweetie, who was it? Chris O'Donnell. Thank you. The brains of the operation. Chris O'Donnell. Everyone wanted Chris O'Donnell, but sweetie told me Will Smith, so I had to get Will Smith.
Wow.
So
smart.
Chris
O'Donnell's great.
Yeah, he's great. He's very great. But I don't know about Schwimmer. He's lovely.
So there is a question that we were talking about that we wanted to ask you, that there was a rumor about the Wild Wild West spider and that it had originally been a part of a Superman movie and that then it came over and became part of Wild Wild West. Is that true?
Okay. So what you're getting at is John Peters.
Mm-hmm.
John Peters was the producer of Wild Wild West. There were several things he insisted on. The least of the problems was a giant spider. The bigger problem was Will Smith and drag, something that neither Will nor I had any interest in having in the movie. We could not talk John out of it, so there's this horrible scene. Look, it's not a good movie. Don't get me wrong. But
I don't know that I agree.
Okay, well, fine. Well, you're wrong. the spider was also way too big. And there was no chemistry between Will and Kevin Kline, unlike Will and Tommy Lee Jones, where it was all chemistry.
When you first heard Kenneth Branagh's accent, what was your response?
Okay, so before you start a movie, you have a table read, where everyone sits around, and for the first time you hear all the actors reading their roles. And we had all the Warner Brothers guys there and all that, and... Will Smith goes out of his way to do a bad reading. He doesn't want to be judged. And he doesn't want his performance or his attitude or anything judged. So he's the worst. You want his stand-in, who can't even read necessarily, to be his table read guy. But Kenneth came in, totally dressed the part. He had the trident facial hair, the Southern accent, and the head of Warner Brothers, Lorenzo de Bonaventura, after the table read, said to me, is there any way we can get rid of Kenneth Branagh and hire that guy to play Loveless? And it was Kenneth Branagh. Lorenzo didn't realize he was so Kenneth was so good that he didn't see Kenneth in the role.
We have a clip of his accent.
Don't you just hate that song?
How do you? This is a good movie. It's camp. You know, it's camp.
There are parts of it that are very funny. A projector, a head as a projector, is a very funny concept.
A lot of funny concepts. All right, next question. You talk in your book about firing Donald Trump. You are one of the few people on earth that can claim to have successfully done this, other than 81 million Americans. What happened?
Okay, so Macy's used to have these commercials where they would have all their branded stars, Martha Stewart, Usher, who I beat in leg wrestling, Mariah Carey, all these people. And Trump was selling his ties, probably, or his suits. And so we're tracking down this whole row. It's set up for Thanksgiving, past all these famous people, and we end up at the end of this huge dolly shot on Donald Trump and a little girl who's about to touch his hair, and he says, "Don't even think about it." That's a joke of the commercial. Funny, kind of. All right, so we shoot the wide master. We get it in one take because Donald will only give us 20 minutes. Everyone else was there for two full days. He said, "I'll give you 20 minutes." So I said, "Okay, we're just going to go in for your close-up." I line up the camera. He says, "You can't shoot me. That's my bad side." I said, "Well, Don, we have to shoot you from this side because you were looking this way at the little girl." And he said, "Find a place where you can shoot me from the good side or I'm leaving." So I held out my hand and I said, "Thank you very much for coming. It was a pleasure working with you." And he said, "You're going to let Donald Trump leave and not get a close-up of this?" Meaning his face.
His amazing face.
His amazing face. And I said, "Well, yeah." And I said, "Okay, we're over here. Next shot, we're over here on Martha." And 10 minutes later, he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, "All right, you can shoot me from my bad side." And I said, we've moved on, Don. Like all bullies, if you just call them on it. Like the governor of Georgia is constantly calling Don on it, and Don backs down all the time against Brian Kemp.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a book about your incredibly storied career. What do you look back on as there are directors who have those moments where a movie seems like it fell down on top of them, and then there are moments where directors this is it, I've clicked in, this is exactly where I was supposed to be, and you've had all manner of experience.
Yeah.
How do you know, what have you learned from those two different versions of what it means to direct a movie?
Oh, it's so hard. Making movies is really hard. What the book tells you is it's really hard. So much is about luck, and so much is trying to not deal with horrible, horrible studio executives. And there are very few good studio executives. There are very few good studios. The best one that I ever dealt with, and I don't know if they're still like this, was Netflix. What I did 3 years of a show called The Series of Unfortunate Events for Netflix, and it was the three best years of my life. They literally, their theory is hire the right director and spend the time, get the right guy, but then let him be the director. I mean, when you go to the dentist, you don't say, "I would use that drill. I wouldn't use that." You don't say to the plumber, "Use the crescent wrench, use it." But studio executives think that they can say anything because they don't understand what directors do. So having said that, what I will say is directing is really hard and it's really painful. I've had sciatica for almost 30 years. From the stress of directing, but luckily I'm not directing much. And once people read this book, I'll direct even less. So maybe my sciatica will go away.
And that's one of the beautiful things about becoming an author.
Yeah.
The book is Best Possible Place, Worst Possible Time. It's out now. When we come back, it's Wheel Time. Barry Sonnenfeld, everybody. Stick around. And we're back. 11 days left. There's so much on the line, but this is the climate election. The climate is on the ballot in the presidential, in the House race, in the Senate race, in governor's races, in local races all across the country. As part of Crooked Ideas' anti-doom initiative, I sat down with writer, activist, and the founder of Climate Action, one of the world's leading environmentalists, Bill McKibben, to talk about how we can solve the climate crisis. If you stick around to the end of this episode, you can hear part of my conversation with Bill McKibben. And he is somebody that has been fighting tooth and nail on climate. And I think over the next couple of days, you'll hear in his conversation, the conversation I just recorded with AOC, we're talking to Bernie Sanders tomorrow about pragmatism, progressivism, how we fight in the way that gets the best result. It was a really interesting conversation. So everybody stick around to the end of the episode to hear that. All right, please welcome back to the stage, AGO and Governor Jared Polis. Welcome back. All right. With the election less than 2 weeks away, no one has even a speck of an idea of what's going to happen. We just have to live with that. In that same spirit, we're each going to share one unknowable, unexplainable thing that we've accepted in order to get through this wild, wacky, wet for some reason ride we call life. All right. Do we have a wheel? Yeah, of course we do. It's a very professional show, Barry Sonnenfeld. Barry, what's something unknown you'll accept?
I have learned to accept something that I don't understand, which is the concept of optimism. Hmm. I'm a big believer that there's no upside to optimism. And I'll tell you what I mean by that if I could. If you get on an airplane mm-hmm. and you turn to the person next to you and say, before we land, this plane is going to crash. One of two things happen. Either as the plane is about to crash, you get to turn to the guy next to you and go, am I right or what, which is a win, or you don't crash, which is a win. That's the joy of pessimism. If you get on a plane and say, if we land, we're going to land successfully, at best, that's only one of two possible outcomes. The other one is you crash and then you lose. So always embrace pessimism, but I'm trying. My wife is trying to convince me to be more optimistic. But I don't understand the concept.
Right, right. It doesn't relate for you. Yeah, I mean, huh. I mean, it seems like a terrible way to move through life.
No, it's great.
Okay. Yeah. And then,
I think I read, though, that optimism correlates with, like, longevity, too. So if you're more pessimistic, you wind up, like, dying.
Great.
Because you know you're going to predict you're going to die and you die right?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Right. I guess you'll be miserable, but good news, it won't last long.
It won't last long. Very Woody Allen-like.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's...
You're welcome.
Thanks. Let's spin that again. Yeah. Governor Polis, what is something you'll never know and you're fine with?
I never understand dress shoes for men. And I see that we all are wearing sneakers. I don't own any and don't wear any, and I don't understand it, and I'm fine with that.
I appreciate that.
They're uncomfortable, they're horrible, like, and you get blisters. Like, why?
Why?
Yeah.
No, I it's actually something that has always bothered me, because it's like, hey, I thought men I thought there was a patriarchy and that the men were in charge. Why are we cinching fabric around our necks and then wearing these sort of tighter shoes? Like, it doesn't make any sense. The tie, you look fantastic. It looks great. And no one's saying otherwise. Uncomfortable.
Embrace affectation.
Oh, okay. Why?
Because people remember you.
That takes a cravat.
Oh, good point. Good point. That's okay. Good. Very good point.
Huh?
Huh? Yeah.
It's interesting.
I'd love to see a man in a dress shoe.
Yeah, it does look
just a dress shoe.
Just well, that's. It's not as attractive when a man keeps the shoes on and the rest is off. I'll say
no,
that
doesn't work.
It doesn't translate that way.
Do you think people won't remember you if you're not wearing a tie? You're a very memorable person.
Well, I wasn't always. Not until I started to wear the ties. But what about cowboy boots? Are they allowed?
I can't.
Them's fighting words in Colorado, Barry.
I'm a big embracer of cowboy boots.
No, those serve a purpose. Because like if you're going through like mud and terrain, like you do want snakes. Boots. Yeah, snakes, exactly. Snakes. So snakes. I'm talking dress shoes. Don't understand it. I'm good with it.
Okay, good.
They don't protect you from snakes.
No. Good point.
So at your wedding, you were wearing sneakers. Uh-oh.
You know?
Ooh. You were not being true to yourself.
I have to go back and look
at
the photos. Oh, okay. I have to go. I was wearing a cravat. I literally was. A yellow one.
What kind of fucking gay man doesn't remember the shoes he wore at his own wedding?
I'm going to go back and look at the photos.
Are you kidding me? Does your husband remember what shoes you were wearing?
I'll ask him right after this.
I hope you do. Let's spin it again.
Feeling it's gonna be me.
There you go, Odom. It is.
Okay.
What's an unknown you accept?
Why we say bless you after people sneeze, but nothing for a cough. Nothing for a cough, bless you for a sneeze. Confounding to me.
It is confounding. Yeah. Why do we do that?
You're asking me and I'm asking you.
It would seem like we should say nothing after people sneeze, and it's cool after people fart. Like, you're cool. We're cool.
But lots of farts are silent.
Right.
Yeah.
But deadly.
Yeah, a lot of farts.
It is a pure cultural thing that farting is. I mean, obviously, they're gross. We don't enjoy them.
No.
So there's a value to us of finding them repellent and embarrassing.
I thought the proper etiquette is to pretend you didn't do it. Isn't that the proper etiquette?
Yeah, that's often a politician's tactic, I suppose. Yeah. Why do we say bless you?
It's strange. I'm like, and oftentimes people don't even hear you say it. It's a formality of a sneeze. They've moved on. There's three in a row. Are you saying, usually a sneeze comes in threes. Right. We're saying bless you each time. That feels crazy.
Do you ever throw in a Gesundheit?
I'm not a Gesundheit girl. No.
Guilty.
I see that. Have you ever thrown in a Gesundheit?
God, no.
Yeah, bless you. It used to be the full God bless you.
God bless you.
God bless you.
Yeah.
I do bless you. I think I just shortened it.
Do you actually say bless you when someone sneezes?
Yeah, I do.
I think, doesn't that like date from like they thought that like you were possessed by a demon if you sneezed or something?
Yeah.
And that's why, I think that's like what that
comes
from. I don't know.
But then a cough, you're not.
But you're not possessive. Which I find more repelling, a cough, frankly.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's more contagious, at least.
I do know that a sneeze is a function of an allergen. So it's like there's an allergen and you cough, it's like you got a virus
situation going on. Or a demon.
Allergen or demon.
The other thing, too, is with there was a generational change because, like, when I was a kid, we were taught to cough and sneeze into our hands. But then there was a change in the 90s or 2000s, and now you do it in the elbow. We all are supposed to do it in the elbow now, but as a kid, we were like, how many people as a kid were trained, make sure you cover your mouth when you cough with your hand? And how many people were trained to do it in the elbow as a kid? It's an older crowd.
We didn't have elbows back then.
We didn't have elbows back then, but you, Kennedy, you were... Wait, so Chris, Gen Z was in the crowd. You're not, no. And did they know about did you get do we
didn't
talk about it at all?
Back then?
Wait, do they have germ theory?
No,
germ theory.
I was an only child. I was allowed to do whatever I wanted.
Wow. All right, let's spin it again.
Wait, there's more? Oh.
All right. I have two. My first one is, I'm just going to do this. This is my last time I'm going to do this. You will not learn from early vote who is going to win. You will not learn from any model who is going to win. You will not know from the absentees who will going to win. Even though John Ralston is the only person to listen to in Nevada, he doesn't know right now who is going to win Nevada. There's going to be no information over the next 10 days that will tell us what the outcome of this election is. There's just nothing to reassure us. You're allowed to be as scared as you want to be. You're allowed to be as confident at that man in row K who knows what's going to happen. As long as you're doing something to make that outcome a reality, you are allowed to feel over the next 10 days however you want. It simply does not matter how you feel over the next 10 days. What's going to matter is how we feel when the election is over. Our mistake in 2016 was worrying way too much about how we felt in the moment as the election was unfolding and not nearly enough about the stakes themselves. So let's focus on the stakes and getting those last few people out. Go to votesaveamerica.com. This is the final stretch. A lot of you are doing a lot. Thank you. A lot of you are doing a little. That is great. A lot of you can still go through your contact list and find those three friends in those seven swing states and get them to turn out. We're just going to have to live with the uncertainty over the next week. I never need to find out where the eels are mating or how they do it. I simply never need to find out. I know that they're going to somewhere far away. I know it's a bit of a mystery. That's supposed to be a mystery. What about an eel is telling these scientists that they ought to be, we ought to be getting to the bottom of their reproductive situation. They're little demon freaks from deep below the ocean. Don't follow them. They go so far from us to mate, and we're going to fucking follow them? Let them go. They are monsters from the deep. You're going to go find the place? I don't think so.
Can I comment on your thing for 1 second?
Mm-hmm.
If you embrace my theory of pessimism, what you want to do is bet money that Trump will win. Therefore, if he wins, you make money. If he loses, you get to not have Trump as president.
That's like blood money, Barry. That's like blood money. Yeah, you know, like those blood diamonds in Africa. Like that's like
hedging.
What that is.
You're hedging.
Well, you're
just to leave it here. My sincere response to your pessimism is: I think if you want to be pessimistic because you enjoy being pleasantly surprised, I think that's a completely fine way to go through life. I think especially in a cynical and very anxious time, remembering, and this is something I've said before, that being cautiously optimistic and disappointed is not less sophisticated than being cynical and pleasantly surprised.
Totally agree.
And that's I think, the most important. You can be hopeful. You can be nervous. Come as you are. But nobody knows what's going to happen.
And leave it all on the field.
And leave it all on the fucking field.
Work your butts off. Let's just make sure if the wrong thing happens, you know that you did everything that you could to forget it, to make sure it didn't, and don't feel guilty for one moment.
Yeah. No guilt. When we come back, we're going to end on a high note. Say that into the mic.
I love the present pause. There's so much tension. Every time there's that silence, it's just fantastic. I love it.
Been discovered? Is it happening for me finally?
No, he's politely saying you shouldn't talk.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the quiet parts of the show, the parts where he didn't talk. All right. And we're back because we all need it. Here it is, this week's high note.
Hi, love it. My name's Sochi, and I'm getting my PhD in neuroscience at MIT. I've been a longtime listener since my senior year of high school, and my high note this week is that I passed my PhD qualifying exam and submitted my vote-by-mail ballot with the help of Vote Save America's Build Your Own Ballot tool.
Hi, love it. This is Mary from Salt Lake City. My high note of the week is that I just finished another round of phone banking and writing letters to remind people to get out and vote. My 30th birthday is on Election Day this year, and I'm working really hard to make sure my birthday wish comes true. Anyways, I love your show, and keep up the good work. Thanks.
1 week before the election, if you want to send us a high note, you can leave us a message about something that made you feel hopeful at lowlyhighnotes@crooked.com, or you can leave it in the Friend of the Pod Discord. That is our show. Thank you so much to Ego Wodum, Barry Sonnenfeld, and Governor Jared Polis.
Thank you.
There are 9 days. Until the elections, have a great night. Have a great weekend. Sign up for a shift at votesaveamerica.com.
Love it or leave it. It's love it or leave it.
Love It or Leave It is a Crooked Media production. It is written and produced by me, John Lovett, and Lee Eisenberg. Kendra James is our executive producer. Chris Lord is our producer. And Kennedy Hill is our associate producer. Hallie Kiefer is our head writer. Sarah Lazarus and Jocelyn Kaufman, Peter Miller, Alan Pierre, Will Miles, and Mohamed El-Sheikhi are our writers. Evan Sutton is our editor. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis provide audio support. Stephen Colon is our audio engineer. And Milo Kim is our videographer. Our theme song is written and performed by Sure Sure. Thanks to our designer, Bernardo Serna, for creating and running all of our visuals, which you can't see because this is a podcast, and to our digital producers, David Tolles, Claudia Shang, Mia Kelman, and Matt DeGroat, for filming and editing video each week so you can. Hey, everybody, it's Love It. Before we go, check out my interview with climate activist and environmentalist Bill McKibben, one of the smartest people talking about climate change. This is part of Crooked's Anti-Doom Initiative from Crooked Ideas. We are talking about climate change, not only about the threats we face, but of the people and organizations and companies and policies that are actually having an impact and proving that we can win this fight. Check it out. It was a great conversation. Joining us today is writer, activist, founder of climate action nonprofit 350.org, and one of the world's leading environmentalists, Bill McKibben. Welcome to the show.
Hey, what a pleasure to be with you, man.
Let's start with this. The Inflation Reduction Act. Terrible name. I mean, it's fine. I'm glad we called it that. But many thought climate action on this scale was a political impossibility. Can you talk about what its passage represents, both in terms of the policy and in terms of how the politics have shifted?
Well, let's talk about the politics that got us there, which is completely fascinating. Young people in the Sunrise Movement set up this amazing thing and brought us the Green New Deal, and it kind of changed the politics for a moment around all this, such that in the 2020 Democratic primaries, climate was, in many polls, the number one issue for voters. And that meant that Joe Biden needed to consolidate support with the Bernie wing of things, and he did so by making, above all, a real pledge to take that Green New Deal and start translating it into something. And he kept that pledge. The first big slug of money that the U.S. government has ever spent on trying to fight the single biggest problem the world has ever faced.
And the largest investment any country on Earth has ever made in addressing climate change. Based on the passage of the IRA, the pledges we've seen around the world, the shifts we've seen in politics and policy, a lot more to do. But where are we now in your mind on the doom-hope continuum?
Well, look, the things that we were warning about 40 years ago are now coming true, and they are scary and real. On the other hand, we're also seeing a rapid spike in the implementation of renewable energy, which is the one thing big enough to have some hope. We finally are starting to build out those solar panels and wind turbines, and it's starting to make a difference. You know, June 2023 had the hottest temperatures ever recorded on this planet, but June 2023 was also the month when human beings started past the point of putting up a gigawatt of solar panels every day. That's the equivalent of a nuclear power plant in solar panels every single day. We've got cheap wind, cheap sun, cheap batteries. They're on the shelf. We can deploy them at speed, and we must.
The other day, I saw an article on, I think it was the New York Times or some other elite publication that said, top 10 climate-friendly recipes when you're cooking at home. And what I honestly wanted to say is like, hey, why don't you do me a favor and go fuck yourself? Because for a long time, the oil industry and sort of right-wing media has been trying to make this about individual responsibilities and individual pain, right? You're going to lose your hamburgers. You're going to lose your straws. No one's taking my straws, Bill. But what we've seen with the Biden administration with their political tack is it's much more about what we're going to gain. We're going to gain clean energy. We're going to get new jobs, new industries. How do you feel about that distinction? Do you think it's a little bit of a cop-out to try to not talk about individual responsibility, or do you think that that's the right move politically?
Look, I'm glad that my house is covered with solar panels, and I'm glad that they connect to a EV in the garage. But we are past the point where we're going to solve this one Tesla at a time, one vegan dinner at a time. Mm-hmm. The most important thing an individual can do is be a little less of an individual and join together with others in movements and campaigns large enough to change the basic economic and political ground rules here.
Bill McGibbon, thank you so much.
Thank you, man. What a pleasure. And thanks for all the work you guys do all the time. We're really grateful for it.
Thank you to Bill McKibben. Learn more about the Anti-Doom Initiative at crookedideas.org. And to make sure your voice is heard on everything you care about, you know what you have to do. You have to vote, and you have to get everybody that you've ever met to vote.